Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Steve Jones Show. Steve in the Sunbury Motors Studio this afternoon, joining us after his trip to Scranton last night. Joining us on the toll-free line at 800-795-9565 this afternoon. As a matter of fact, in about 20 minutes from now, Vince Welsh from ESPN ABC, one of the pit reporters for the upcoming Indy 500 coverage. As we look at the big race where qualifying is going to be going on this weekend and the race on Memorial Day weekend next week, one of the analysts on the broadcast, Scott Goodyear, will be joining us. As he did from Pocono last year, or just about a year ago. He'll be joining us from Indianapolis as well to get you set next week for the running of the Indianapolis 500. That's just some of the things coming up. Tony Knott from Spotlight Ticket Management on the way later on this week as well, and lots of stuff. Well, later on this week, there's only one more day this week. Lots of stuff going on here on the Steve Jones Show as we go through what I think is my second favorite month of the year, the month of May. And, yeah, by the way, there's a big horse race, too. We may talk about that tomorrow, too, with the Preakness. Found an interesting story earlier today regarding baseball. And this was actually a young pitcher that actually pitched, it was like 14 innings, and pitched almost 200 pitches. I couldn't believe that amount of pitches, but that's what actually happened. And the question that popped into my mind is something we've talked about with Steve many times. Is it good for a young pitcher to be throwing that many pitches? Look at how many Tommy John surgeries there have been since the original Tommy John surgery. That's something they talked about on the Dan Patrick Show a couple of weeks ago. But think about how many Tommy John surgeries there's been since the original one, and how many of them continue to have. I mean, let's see, the last one is Fernandez of the Marlins. He's going to have Tommy John surgery. And something they were talking, and they actually talked about the throwing that many pitches at that young of an age. One of the things that I've stressed a lot in Little League baseball and youth baseball, I don't like young pitchers throwing a curveball.
Had a long talk with Rob Cooper, the Penn State baseball coach, yesterday about that. You know when he recommends that you should throw a curveball?
I would say no earlier than senior year of high school.
Yeah, he said age 16.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah.
He said age 16.
I mean, that's almost 200 pitches. That's just unbelievable.
So, I think that every youth baseball coach needs to find itself a coach's clinic somewhere. We're going to have Rob on the show here at some point. I've talked to Rob about this, and basically talking about how youth coaches should coach youth baseball. I mean, he's coached at the highest level. I mean, he has coached the United States to a gold medal.
I'd sit and listen to him.
Okay. Which he did last summer. I mean, he coached the United States to a gold medal in international baseball. And how, I mean, I watched the Little League World Series, and they're like, yeah, curveball, curveball. It's like, what are you people doing? I see it all the time, and I know it's wrong. Now, change-up's one thing. I don't mind a change-up. Change-up doesn't put any stress on the arm at all. Curveball puts a lot of stress.
I've even said if you want to throw a glorified slider,
no.
I mean,
no.
At the senior division, I'm more okay with that than a curveball. But I always like, I always told young pitchers, I have a knuckleball, I got a curveball. I said, you have two pitches. You've got a fastball and a changeup. That's all you need. If both of those work really well, you're going to strike guys out.
Yeah, and I talked to Rob about this the other day. And it is one of those deals where if you sit there and you really, you know, listen to what he has to say, when it comes to youth baseball, I think it's just very important that every baseball coach take time to listen to him. By the way, Vince Welsh scheduled for today. Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management, scheduled for today. Tomorrow, Dick Girardi on the Preakness.
Yes. Sorry, Kurt I got Smith. Excited there for a minute.
Kurt Smith, Voices of the Game, coming up as well. I may hold Kurt back till Monday. But this is, you know, I just think that I think it's great that parents get involved, but I also think you should know what you're doing.
Well, here's what sparked the conversation. Yeah. It's a high school player in Washington State who threw 194 pitches over 14 innings. He was removed in the 15th in a 1-0 victory in a district tournament game. Now, I understand he might have been on a roll and was pitching really well. He ended up striking out 17. But at 194 pitches, that's like 120 more than I'm really comfortable with him throwing. That's the one thing I really liked with Little League over the years.
Right.
And I don't know, and I can't speak for Babe Ruth or Ripken. I can't speak for those because I don't know. I've never coached those, but they have a pitch count in there.
Mm-hmm.
And from time to time, it's frustrating as a coach because you're on a pitch count. But it's also for the benefit of the player. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that we've had a pitcher that's pitching really, really well, but he's going deep in counts and batters. You know, there's a lot of five pitch at bats or seven pitch at bats, and by the fourth inning, he's out of pitches. And it's frustrating because now you got to bring in a pitcher that may not be in as much of a groove, get as many guys out or have the ball down, but at least it's for the right reason.
Well, I talked to Rob Cooper earlier this week, the Penn State baseball coach. And the first thing I asked him about the bats, BB core, aluminum, and wood. You know how I feel. I'm a strong proponent. Everybody should be using wooden bats. His thoughts?
No, I am 100% for wood bats, for composite wood, you know, a composite type wood. Because the composite wood, you know, the argument that, well, you know, it's going to cost so much money because the wood bats are going to be breaking all the time. Well, the truth of the matter is that the composite wood lasts as long as any aluminum, and it plays like a wood, and it teaches your you know, like I have my two boys, which they've got my athletic ability, so they need every bit of help they can get. I have them hit with wood all the time, not so much in games, but like in BP and everything else, because it helps teach you where to put the barrel of the bat. The problem, though, Steve, is that the Eastons, the Louisville Sluggers that make aluminum bats, the DeMarinis, there's so much money right now that they're not going to allow that to happen. They're just not. You know, whether it's giving money to youth leagues, whether it's, you know, there's so many. I'm not one of them. I promise you, I'm not one of them. But there's a lot of college coaches making, you know, 50 grand off their bat deal. And it's not going to happen. So what they decided was we're going to dumb them down and make these aluminum because we've got the technology. We're going to make these aluminum play like wood. But I'm more of a wood bat fan myself.
Okay, let's keep it on the youth for a moment because, you know, your boys are now playing at this particular point. If they're pitching, how early do you want them to start throwing breaking stuff as opposed to a fastball?
My oldest son's 13, just turned 13 last week, and he has not been allowed to throw a breaking ball yet.
All right.
In a game. Everything for him is fastball changeup.
Okay.
And really what I try to get him to do is, you know, I want you to, you know, in the game, you're going to work the fastball in, fastball. Like if I want him, I want to get used to throwing strikes, first of all, and then I want him to be able to go in and out, fastball in, fastball away, fastball in, fastball away, on the, you know, on the plate. And then we start working the changeup in, but he hasn't been allowed to throw a breaking ball yet.
When would you allow him to?
I'd probably put it into his hands, probably, you know, around 16 or so.
Really? Okay, interesting. I feel the same way about this you do, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just, you know, and I think with some guys that might be a little too early too, just from the standpoint of, you know, you got to look at how their body type is. Like, if my boy's body is similar to mine, like as far as the development and growth, mm-hmm. like then I don't think it would hurt them as much to put a breaking ball in their hands at the age of 16, because I don't know how much more it's going to get. You know, their body's going to change now.
Right.
If it's somebody else and they've got a, you know, you can tell there's some more growth in there and a, you know, all that kind of stuff, then, you know, it's, and I'm just telling you, like, at our level especially, it's you know, it's great that they have a fastball, curveball, changeup, but your curveball can't play if you can't throw your fastball for strikes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you can't at all. How many pitches do you like your starter idealistically to have?
I want them to have three. I want them to have a fastball, changeup, and I want them to have a curve or a slider.
Right.
You know, you know, one of the things that we do early in the fall is, you know, the first two times those guys throw, they're not allowed. The hitters don't know this, just the catchers and pitchers, but they're only allowed to throw fastballs.
So that's just Rob Cooper's thought. He's the head baseball coach at Penn State. We're talking about youth baseball. The last part was a transition into what he does with his pitchers, who, of course, are 19 to 22 years of age. But he says, look, he's not going to have his boys throw a curveball until they're 16 years old. It's not going to.
I think he's right on.
I mean, the bottom line is, and he's right about this, where do you spot your fastball? And that's one thing in the Pirates organization, as an example. I mean, I don't know if anybody in the league ever really caught on to this, but I think they did based on the record. But the Pirates in their minor league system want first pitch fastball. They want first pitch fastball in their minor league system. And once you get that, then they start working on the other stuff. But this is, again, when we're talking about the pitching part of it, and I watch, if it's a changeup, it's one thing. But I watch the Little League World Series. You know, 12, and a couple of those kids, you know, have lapsed to being 13-year-olds at that point. You know, they might be early August children. But they're out there, and you know they're throwing curveballs. You're like, what are you doing? Who taught you this? Right? And I think it's the obligation. And ESPN, which does a brilliant job, by the way, of covering the Little League World Series. So, you know. But I think it's the obligation of the analysts, especially those who pitch, to discourage that on the air. Just my opinion.
Well, one of the things that I notice in watch, and you can watch the Little League World Series, and they'll have the speed comparisons to Major League because of the shorter distance from the mound to the plate. The fastballs have gotten a lot faster, right, first of all. So if you're able to position that fastball in spots that are down in the strike zone, it's going to be very tough for any of those hitters, especially with BB Corps bats, to get anything elevated. Throw in the fact that if you've got a good changeup, that makes your fastball look twice as fast.
The BB Corps got to go. It's got to go. And he's right. There are now coaches all over the place that have bat deals.
And Easton is one of the biggest ones, Steve.
And I'm telling you right now, the game of baseball would be far better served if they all had wooden bats.
I'm not sure that there's a ton of difference with the BB Corps to the wooden bat right now.
Oh, I think there is.
The pop just isn't there off the BB Corps bats that used to be off the old aluminum bats.
Yeah. I think BB Corps is junk.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. I've seen a lot of BB Corps bats, not much happening with them.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. It was also great to be in Scranton last night as part of the Penn State Caravan with James Franklin. 900-plus people. Yeah, here's a great story for you. They decide they're going to auction off Penn State football season tickets last night. So Franklin then grabs the microphone and he just starts adding to the pot. And he says, look, he says, I think it started out at $1,200. And he says, I'm going to autograph a helmet to the winner as well. Well, then it pops up. He says, I'm going to make a personal cell phone call to your best friend. All right. And it pops up a little bit for a personal tour of the football building pops up more. I leaned over. I said, all right. I said, they can come up and for like a quarter of the game in a broadcast. He says, do you guys sit with Steve Jones and Jack Campbell? I go, oh, geez. They got two guys got up to $8,000. Finally, the winning bid was $8,100. They then asked both of them if they were willing to pay, right? They both said yes. They got $16,000. All the money went to scholarships.
Wow.
How about that? That was a lot of fun last night. All right, guy, it's always a lot of fun to always talk to, just enjoyable just to sit around and kick it around with Vince Welsh from Indianapolis. Vince, welcome back. It is always great to have you with us to talk about IndyCar.
Hey, good to visit with you guys again. That sounds like a pretty cool night last night at Penn State.
Yeah, it was. It was a great night last night. We had a lot of fun. I know a lot of people have asked you about the Grand Prix race that took place there. Talk about standing start, rolling start, and what you see as the pluses and minuses of each, because each one has it, Vince, so you witnessed both. So what are the pluses and minuses of each?
Well, I think that, from a pluses standpoint, I think you can argue whether a plus is a minus, but what I will say about the starts is that there are a lot of drivers that are comfortable with the standing starts, and there are drivers who aren't. Those that are comfortable with the standing start, they've maybe done it throughout their career coming up through the Formula Series in Europe or wherever the case may be, it's fine to them. Those that aren't comfortable, and those would be the pluses, and those that aren't comfortable with it, they don't like it, so there's minuses to that. I think what you have from a minus standpoint on the standing start is what happened on Saturday. You have the potential for the bad accident if somebody doesn't get started, particularly somebody at the front, because that means all the more cars that have to go past. I think it's exciting to watch. Some would argue that. Some would say, some like blue, some like red. People would say, hey, I like the standing start. Some would say, oh, I don't like it. Some will say they should have double file restarts. Some would say, oh, no, we should have single file restarts. A lot of that is to an individual preference, and I think the standing start and the rolling start is similar in that vein.
All right, what was it like to see them actually go the opposite way down the front straight in Indy?
Well, it was unusual for sure, and a lot of the drivers even talked about that. It was weird to be driving down the front straight and past the pylon or the pagoda on the right side of your car instead of the left side. So it was different, but I liked it. I really did. I thought the Grand Prix was exciting. I thought it was, we had the drama at the beginning. Thank God no one was hurt seriously. It was unfortunate that it happened, but how incredibly dramatic it was to see that actually take place in the video, the way the video played out and so forth. The race itself, there was overtaking. I think the course was fast. The drivers liked it. It couldn't have been more dramatic at the end than Pagano holding on to win and then running out of fuel as he crosses the finish line. I mean, it's it's the first event So there's, you know, there's a lot to look at and say, oh, this was great or this wasn't. And hopefully more fans will come out and watch it in the future, and more people will tune in the future. And I think they got some tweaking to do, but all in all, I think it was a success.
Name of the game at Indy is speed. In fact, it's like listening to little rockets go around. Last year, we did the show at Pocono, and that's one of the first things that they talked about at Pocono after having all those years of NASCAR races and bringing back Indy cars was people were taken aback by the speed. What kind of speeds are you seeing generated right now in practice runs?
You know, last time I looked at the board today, I think Elio was fastest at over 226. The last time I checked, was the last one or the only one over 226. That might have changed since I saw it last, because it's been a pretty busy day today. I think that you know, they're going to give them a little more boost, a little more horsepower for qualifying. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a four-lap average in the in the 230 range. A lot depends on what the weather's doing and so forth. The weather's been unusual here over the course of, well, I was going to say unusual, but for Indianapolis, it's not unusual that it was beautiful on Saturday and we had weather on Sunday, but it's been raining and cold here the last couple of days, and it's supposed to be more the same tomorrow, and then actually a little sunnier and warmer on Saturday and Sunday, so that's going to throw another kind of wild card into the mix. But I think you're going to see guys probably qualify in the 230 range.
We hear a lot about car setup, Vince. How much of a difference is there between a car setup for a four-lap qualifier as opposed to trying to go 200 laps and 500 miles?
Well, when you're going four laps, you're going to trim that car out. You're going to lay that back wing down, and you're not going to be so worried about aerodynamics or downforce, because you've only got to survive it for four laps, and you're out there all by yourself. So you're not going to be in dirty air. You're not going to be dealing with the turbulence of other cars in front of you or around you. So you can really trim that race car out a lot more on a four-lap qualifying run. And then you can during the course of the race. And even once the race gets started, you know, the guys that are going to be in the front, they're going to set their car up differently than those that are having to come from mid-pack or the back, because the guys from mid-pack or the back are going to be in a lot more traffic, and you have to have your car set up to handle that turbulence accordingly. If you feel like maybe you're going to be out front and you're going to be in cleaner air throughout the majority of the day, then you can set your car up to be a little more trimmed out. So you know, a lot depends on how you see your race unfolding, how you know where you're starting from. But from a qualifying perspective, you're going to have that car trimmed out to be as fast and as sleek as it can be for that 10-mile run of four laps.
How important is this time for you personally to develop some relationships over the next week or so that can pay off for you on race day?
Well, I think what I enjoy most about this time of year, you know, obviously I know these guys. I've covered this series for a long time. You know, we had the race at St. Pete. We had the race last weekend here, the Indy Grand Prix. You know, I've been to a couple of different tests. I was at the test at Barber. I was at the road course test here in Indianapolis. You know, I'm here every day. A lot of these drivers are not just the drivers, but crew guys are people that I consider friends, as well as people that I deal with on a professional level. But I think that it allows you to get deeper when you're here for the course of, you know, we're here basically a month for those of us, especially those like myself who live here in Indianapolis. You know, you can be here every single day over the course of a month. And it allows you to get so much deeper into the team. You know, you get lucky sometimes and stumble onto a story of something that's interesting that's happened to a guy that, or a team that may not even find it to be newsworthy, but you do, and you can make something work with it. You know, I had a good conversation. Jack Hawksworth, he's a rookie from England who led the most laps in the Grand Prix race on Saturday. And just what an interesting character he is, and had an opportunity to just kind of sit out on the wall a week or so ago and chat with him about, you know, back in January, he didn't have a ride. He didn't want to be what he calls a journeyman, you know, take a ride here, take a ride there, one race here, one off there. and he was going to become a personal trainer, and that was going to be his full-time occupation, and then he was going to race a little bit on the side. And he put down his $1,000 to be able to do that and take this course. And then Brian Herta called and said, hey, we'd like you to test our car at Sebring. You know, would you be able to do that? And he said, yeah. Well, then he goes to Sebring, and he knocks Herta's socks off. And he said, man, this guy's special. He's just a kid's terrific. And they end up putting him in the car full time. And I think those are the kind of stories that that when you're just having an opportunity to kind of sit around and shoot the breeze with people, whether it's a driver or an engineer, a team manager, even just a crew guy, you get a little deeper in the opportunity to discover these stories and get to know guys on a different level. And I think those are the things that we like to tell and hope to tell during the course of the race or during qualifying this weekend or the race next weekend, that fans can kind of attach themselves to and say, you know, maybe some personal trainer out there who's not a huge IndyCar fan says, man, I like that guy. He wanted to do what I do for a living. I'm going to root for him, you know. And if we've done that, yeah. And if we've, you know, gained Hawksworth one fan because of that, then, yeah. You know, I think we've done our job in a sense.
What about the Kurt Busch thing?
I think it's a great story. I think that... I mean, let's make no bones about it. Going from IndyCar to NASCAR, NASCAR to IndyCar is not easy. It is not. And anyone who has done it will tell you that it's not. But Kurt Busch has done a phenomenal job of doing all of the right things, asking good questions. He's not taken it for granted. He's not come over here and said, hey, I'm a Sprint Cup champ, I'm Kurt Busch, this thing's going to be easy. Even when he got in the car for the first time and made it look easy going 219 around here, he never has taken it for granted. The guys on the team talk about the questions that he asks. He asks smart questions. He wants to know information that's pertinent to how the car handles. I mean, they have been beyond impressed, not just with his driving ability, but with his attitude and what he has brought to the table as well in regards to his own feedback and his own knowledge. And I think it's a great story, you know, to do the double. So few have done it, to run 500 miles here in Indianapolis and then jump on a jet and fly to Charlotte and do 600 miles there. You know, I think it's going to be the challenge for Kurt, and Kurt, this is something Kurt's talked about. It's one thing to be out on the track by yourself or out there in a single file line with two or three teammates, but it's a completely different animal to be out there with 32 others and have guys all around you, front, back, left, right, and deal with that turbulence and the dirty air and the mistakes that others make and the frustrations that you might have, and not succumbing to those frustrations or that lack of patience or whatever, you know, the case may be that victimizes so many racers around here, whether you're a rookie or experienced. And I think that's going to be the real challenge for Kurt. But everybody has been completely impressed with what he has brought to the table and the job that he's done so far. And, you know, I don't think Kurt Busch is going to win this race, but I think Kurt Busch could finish in the top 10. And if he does, I think that's one hell of an accomplishment.
It's also good for the sport, too, just because it draws attention.
It's a great story, you know, and I think that from the NASCAR side, it's a great story from the NASCAR side, and it's
sure
a great story from the IndyCar side. And I think if Kurt is successful at it, you'll see a few other IndyCar or a few other NASCAR guys that'll give it a look.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon. It's not like AJ didn't go and win Daytona. It's not like Mario didn't go and win Daytona and they flipped to the other side. I mean, it's happened over time, but it's good for the sport, in my personal opinion.
Well, and it's a little bit easier to do. I mean, let's be honest, it's a little easier to do in this day and age as well when you've got the helicopter from the track to the airport and get on your private jet and fly, and you've got people that are, going to give you an IV and make sure all the nourishment and, you know, all of those things. But still, it's a huge task, physically and mentally and logistically. Everything has to go just right to do. So I think it's going to be it's a great story from both sides, from Charlotte and from Indianapolis, and I hope Kurt is successful in it on both endeavors.
helicopter, private jet, IV. You and I can relate to that every day.
Well,
all right,
so that's how we roll. Yeah,
yeah, that's the set we're in, Vince. how do you feel about the new qualifying procedure?
Well, if you figure it out, let me know, will you?
I'll email you.
If it takes, you know, we were just having this conversation amongst some of our race broadcast personnel, and everybody's going to take a qualifying run on Saturday, but we're going to leave here on Saturday and have no clue as to who's going to start where, because they're not going to set any qualifying positions on Saturday, even though we're going to have 33 guys go out there and qualify on Saturday. That's going to come back on Sunday. You're going to come back and you're going to have 33, 10 through 33 qualify for their position in that 10 through 33 range. And then you're going to have the 9 fastest from Saturday have a one-time shootout for the top 9 speeds. So it's different. I think the jury's still out on it, to be honest with you. You need great weather. Thankfully, it looks like the weather's going to cooperate both Saturday and Sunday. It's hard for me to really say, to be honest with you, to be critical of it or to praise it, because I haven't seen it go off yet. I haven't seen it happen yet. So it's it's different. There's a lot of traditionalists that don't like it, and I understand that. You know, this place is about the history and the tradition. But times change, and the Speedway is trying to come up with something to make it more exciting, to make fans want to come out and see it and enjoy it and have some drama in regards to who's going to set on the pole. So, let's wait and see. Maybe we could better address that about the 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Well, I'll let you digest that. It's just always enjoyable just talking with you. You're just a fun guy to talk with, and appreciate your insight very much, Vince. Thanks so much.
Hey, always enjoy talking about the Indianapolis 500, and they could run bicycles around this place, and I think it'd be pretty cool to see. So it's a special place, and I know you guys understand that. And for those that are listening, if they've never had an opportunity to come to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I hope you, if you're a race fan or just a sports fan in general, you put that on your bucket list and come check it out. It's a pretty special place.
Yeah, it sure is. I took the tour a couple of years ago, and I was out there for a Big Ten basketball tournament. And they said, "Do you want to stand on the track?" I said, "Yeah, I want to stand on the track." And you stand there, and you feel like the history of that place. It's, you know, there's certain places that there are the Fenway Parks, the Lambeau Fields, and there's the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Those are the kind of places that set apart from others.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Hey, Vince, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, enjoy it. Happy to do it. We'll do it again soon.
Vince Welsh. And what a great job he does all the time. Enjoy having him on, but just enjoy his work, because he is a pro's pro. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Have you ever sat back and really thought about that? For almost 100 years, Sunbury Motors has been here for you. 4 generations strong. That alone won't make you buy your next new Ford from SMC, but that reputation, plus these deals, will. Buy a brand new Ford Fiesta for only $12,810. New Focuses start at $15,915 at Sunbury Motors. SMC has always been the dealer you think of if you want a new Ford truck. Brand new 2013 F-150 crew cabs are discounted $9,600, starting at $34,939. If you want to buy a new Ford, it's really pretty simple. A 99-year reputation of satisfying customers, the largest Ford inventory in 6 counties, and thousands of dollars of savings makes SMC your preferred Ford dealer. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com.
Again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still.
There's nothing like Sergeant Carter and Corporal Boyle around the corner waiting for him.
Only you would make that comparison.
Hey, really?
Well, I waited as long as I could. I tried not to play it, but I couldn't help myself.
Good personal friend of George Lindsay's, who played Goober Pyle. Uh-huh. That was Gomer Pyle. singing.
And this will be the last year he sings it.
Okay. All right. So, really? For who?
Me.
Okay, why?
Well, this would be part of the show, you know, part of the whole event. Not something you would normally care about, because you just care about the sporting event. I care about the whole set of festivities leading up to and including.
Look, roll the cars, all right? Get them moving.
Or make them do a standing start, whichever.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. Just make them move.
And by the way,
I don't care about back home in Indiana. I don't care what they do to the national. I don't. Let's just go.
Just marry home with George. Get rid of her too.
Okay. The only thing, I'll tell you right now. The one time that I sat back pregame and went, "Oh my God," okay, was when they took the B-2 stealth bomber and they flew it right over the rim of the Rose Bowl. Now that was ultra cool.
They've done that at the 500.
I wasn't there when it happened. I'm saying for me personally.
Excellent point. Yeah, I get you.
I really don't, you know. So, like, you know, I'm watching on TV. I don't care how many balloons they release. I don't care about back home in Indiana. You know, whatever. Just, hey, like, start moving. Yeah, I think you're so into all the pre stuff. I don't know if you even like the event anymore.
Oh no, I don't move from my chair till the 500th mile is run.